cultivating cannabis in the Sunshine State. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead on the show this morning, we're taking a look at the challenges and the big opportunities ahead for medical marijuana here in Florida. It's a hot topic and we want your calls. Get on the line now. It's 549-2937. Then later, one UNF student's incredible Cinderella story goes from a book to a major motion picture. We'll tell you about Cinder Girl. Plus, see what Congaree and Penn Farm is harvesting and cooking up this spring. That's later in the hour. All of that ahead this morning. But first, the rapidly expanding medical marijuana market here in Florida. There are major developments happening right now, both in the state legislature and on the business side. There's a lot to talk about here, so we're pleased to welcome columnist Shelton Hull. He covers cannabis for Folio Weekly. Shelton, good morning.
Good morning.
Also here in studio, Jacksonville attorney Sally Kent Peebles. She's a partner in the powerhouse marijuana law firm, Vicente Cederberg. Good morning to you.
Thank you for having me.
Already getting calls, too, as we talk about medical marijuana in Florida. What are your questions about this rapidly expanding sphere? It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and tweets to @MelissaNJax. Lots of comments on our Facebook page as well. All right. In a moment, Shelton, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about various issues around this. But first, I want to ask you, Sally, as the state legislative session continues in Tallahassee, what is the biggest story emerging from our state capitol when it comes to medical marijuana?
Well, you may have seen that medical marijuana is now allowed to be smoked by patients in the state of Florida. That was a big win for the patients because a lot of patients need that form of ingestion to get the best relief. However, there was a secondary bill filed that people are calling the low THC bill that will cap the THC limit on flower at 10%. There's a couple reasons this is notable. You know, Florida already had a low THC program that they came out in 2016 and voted overwhelmingly to put in a full THC law. So kind of moves us backward. And additionally, a lot of patients have to who have debilitating medical conditions really only have their symptoms alleviated by flower that may have more than 10% THC. So this just makes patients have to smoke more to obtain the relief they're going to need. And if smoking is really a concern to the legislators, they might, you know, this seems to be counterproductive, making them smoke more.
Okay, Shelton Hull, you write a regular column about cannabis. You had a recent piece looking at the petition drive to get full marijuana legalization on the 2020 ballot for voters to decide.
Yeah, that's right. That effort's being put forth by an organization called Regulate Florida. Last I heard, they've got about 25,000 signatures already lined up, and they need to have, I believe, 750,000 by February 1st. So they're working on that now. You can go to regulateflorida.org, and you can sign up, or you can sign up to help distribute flyers, petitions, or you can print out your own petitions and sign them and mail them in.
Given the long and winding road to medical marijuana becoming legalized here in Florida, how do you see this latest frontier in the issue proceeding or not in Florida?
Well, I think it's going along fine. When I heard that they only had about 20,000 signatures, I was a bit surprised. But, you know, we're not even at summer yet. So once we get into summer, the numbers are going to pick up. And given the amount of support financially and otherwise that was there for Amendment 2 back in 2016, I would assume that there's going to be plenty of support for the full legalization. And, of course, whenever legalization has come up on the ballot anywhere in this country, voters have tended to pass it. And Amendment 2 passed by about 69%. So I would expect it to do maybe not quite that high, but so to speak. But
right. But above the 60% like threshold. Okay.
Yes.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment about the growth of medical marijuana in Florida at 549-2937. Sally Kent Peebles, if Florida goes down the path to full legalization, it would join a number of other states that have done so. It's a brand new source of tax revenue, a huge profit center for these states. At the same time, there have been controversies and challenges, both legislatively and on the business side. As medical marijuana growers really try to roll out their dispensaries around the state, there have been a lot of hiccups. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So I practiced law in Colorado for 5 years before I moved back to Florida. And honestly, I think a lot of the negative press that we've seen hasn't necessarily been as bad as people believe. There are certainly these dispensaries have security issues because people in the criminal world know that there's product in there and they may be a focus of some crime. But really, we've seen that the areas surrounding dispensaries actually have crime go down. And another interesting statistic is that teen use goes down as well. I think it kind of takes away the excitement whenever teens know it's legal. Maybe they don't want to try
it. That's interesting. And everybody and their brother now is marketing CBD, which
yes.
is derived from hemp and has been shown to help adults with anxiety, depression, a number of conditions. What are both of your thoughts about efforts at some point to better regulate this product because it's being sold everywhere?
Sure. Well, you know, Florida, the black market for it in Florida is already practically a $1 billion industry. And we've seen 2017, we had about $14 million in sales. That's more than doubled 2018. Some projections have us going, you know, well into the hundreds of millions of dollars within the next 5-10 years as things proceed along, especially if we go towards towards the full recreational. As far as regulation, it's hard to say. It's kind of a double-edged sword because on the one hand, the government should regulate to ensure purity, ensure consistency of supply. But then at the same time, whenever the government gets involved in things, you have like different degrees of complication.
Sally.
I think that marijuana should absolutely be regulated like alcohol. It is safer than alcohol in a lot of ways. It should be tested and taxed. It can provide a huge economic boom through taxes and job creation. I mean, almost 300,000 jobs have been created by the cannabis industry, and that's more than manufacturing, utilities, the government sector that have been created by those industries. And, of course, the real estate boom that a lot of these states have seen would be great to bring here to Florida. And I think the most important point as well is that Floridians just support this. It's shown that over 60% of Floridians would support legalization. I think it's time to take it out of the black market and regulate it and test it and make it and make people get carded before they are handed this product.
Absolutely. People are trying to, they're talking about, about capping THC levels, which is kind of a fool's bargain because one thing that the old fogies have always said is that the stuff is getting more and more strong, more stronger and stronger as the years go by. That's certainly true. Some strains are, you're looking at upwards of 30% THC. Some of the wax and shatter is 50 to 80% THC. I can say for myself, personally, I have a vicious hangover right now. And if recreational marijuana was legalized, my day would be off to a much better start than it is.
All right, let's go to your calls now as we speak with attorney Sally Kent Peebles and cannabis columnist Shelton Hull. What are your questions about the growth of medical marijuana in the state of Florida? 549-2937. Tracy is in St. Augustine. Hey, Tracy, good morning.
Good morning. I incidentally just left my doctor's office, and I have to say that one of the really big obstacles for me is this constant of people looking down their nose, not my doctor, but anywhere you go, trying to fill a prescription for an opioid, looking down their nose at you like you're an addict, when all I need to take that. But the severe pain that I have, I'm all screwed together. I've had 13 surgeries in a short number of years, and I have severe arthritis and advanced osteoarthritis and joint disease and that sort of thing. And the only thing that makes me feel normal, and I take it very responsibly, always have, are opioids. And guess what? They're affordable. You know what I'd rather take is something natural. I'd rather get some kind of, you know, the card for taking marijuana to help my situation. And there's lots of people like me, but we can't afford it. You know, we
so can't, you'd like ridiculous. To take CBD or cannabis in some form, but you don't want to spend the money. It's too expensive. The product's too expensive.
I can't spend Right. I don't have the money. I'm a disabled adult. I don't have the money for that. You know, disability is helpful, and thank God I have it, but it's not enough to, you know, have enough left over to pay for things like that. Insurance certainly won't cover it of any kind. So, you know, it's, well, not now anyway. Maybe in the future it will. But it's frustrating because opioids are affordable and they work. And I know that medical marijuana probably works. I get CBD oil from my ex in Maine. He sends it to me as I use it topically, and it helps for short periods of time. So I know that it will probably help me. But man, I'd like to see it be more affordable, more accessible, all of that.
Yeah,
I want it to hurry up.
Tracy, thank you. I'm sorry you're in pain, and I thank you so much for talking about your situation, because I know there are many other listeners out there in the exact same situation. So thank you for that. That's Tracy in St. Augustine. Sally, people want access to this product. It's not nearly as affordable, as she pointed out, as opioids, which are also pain relievers, but obviously have caused a deadly and horrible epidemic of addiction. And so at what point do you think the policy framework, the insurance apparatus, everything will shift to making this product more affordable, maybe covered by insurance, easier for more people to obtain for pain and all of the other conditions they are seeking to treat with it?
Well, I've got some great news for the caller. Actually, right now in the legislature, there's four different hemp bills going through the legislature, one of which I think is very likely to pass. That's Senate Bill 1020. It's going to create a license system for those seeking to grow hemp, cultivate, process, and sell. And it also specifically will allow for the legality of cannabinoids, including CBD. So if we see that pass, then at least at the state level, CBD will be legal. We'll still have to look to our commissioner to create a USDA compliant program so that growers can get insurance and grants to grow. But otherwise, it will, at least in the state level, allow for CBD sales.
Yeah. And as with any market, as we get closer and closer to market saturation, prices for that will drop. You look at things like cell phones, laptop computers, whatnot, you can see how prices have have declined as we get more and more people competing in the market. And with this, with the medical marijuana thing, it's one of the few really bipartisan issues that we've got here in Florida. I wouldn't say that necessarily that Florida's opioid problem is worse than anywhere in the country, but everyone listening to this, we have all paid a heavy price in blood and treasure, as they say, in terms of losing people to opioids. And it's really this medical marijuana thing, it's really a quality of life issue. We're not, it's not about incense and hula hoops and little fancy ribbons in our hair. It's about making people feel better. And with this huge contingent of seniors in Florida and the veteran community, and by the way, Buds for Vets and Weed for Warriors will get you your medical cards free if you're a veteran. Having those contingents in our state has really shown how the issue is more universal, and it doesn't fit in with the traditional stereotypes that you might see in pop culture.
Yeah. 549-2937. Jay is on the west side. Hi, Jay. Thanks for holding. Good morning. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, how's everybody doing today?
Good.
All right.
The question I had was, are there any protections for people who get a cannabis prescription from their employers?
Okay. You're shaking. Thanks, Jay. You're shaking your head no, Sally.
There are not presently. Usually, and we see in most of these laws around the country, that they still allow the private right of employer to regulate their companies as they see fit, just as a private company most likely can. Unfortunately, we're not seeing those protections. However, Regulate Florida, that Shelton was talking about earlier, does provide some employee protections. Another reason to really support that amendment moving forward.
Okay. So legally, then, you could lose your job.
Absolutely.
For using this product while you're on the clock.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a major problem. You know, a lot of people support that, but what they're not thinking about is, whereas, you know, people say, oh, but if you show up drunk to your job, you should be able to get fired. But this is completely different, because cannabinoids can stay in your system for weeks. So you might not have smoked it the night before. It doesn't mean you're going to be feeling the effects of it at work, but you could still it could still show up on a blood test.
So if you are drug tested for employment and this compound shows up in the test, you could be fired or not be hired.
Yeah, depending on what your employee's policy is. Yeah.
Which is, we're in this weird area then culturally and legally where this product is legal for medical use, but we haven't crossed that threshold where it's really fully accepted in the business world and considered to be an acceptable product.
Yeah.
It's still classified at the federal level as a narcotic.
Absolutely. And some of the good news perhaps is that President Trump has intimated on a couple of occasions that if such legislation ever came before his desk to reschedule marijuana, to take it away from the Schedule I narcotics classification, he might support it. As far as jobs and whatnot goes, this is a right-to-work state. So as an employer, you're already on thin ice. There aren't a lot of protections anyway. And even in states that have full legalization, there are still issues with employers. For example, the National Football League, they're trying right now to get the league to allow people to utilize it because players, of course, for anti-inflammatory purposes, concussions and whatnot, even players who are living in states that have legal marijuana, and that's probably half the players in the NFL right now, they're not legally allowed to smoke it. They're still subject to testing.
Mm. Caitlin is in Riverside. Hey, Caitlin, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. My question is just, there's not a lot of talk about people with nonviolent crimes going to jail for marijuana. Are they going to be pardoned or going to be discussing any of that as we go into legalization?
Thanks for that. That's an excellent question. Many people around the country are jailed for possession of small amounts of marijuana. Sally.
So Regulate Florida, that would legalize adult use of marijuana in Florida, does have a clause that says you would not be able to get a license if you have a felony. Some of these laws evolve in certain states that say, okay, you can't get a license to grow or sell if you have a felony unless it's a marijuana-related drug offense, because it seems, again, counterproductive to penalize someone for now a law that it would be legal moving
and
forward.
And what about the people serving time now?
Well, they will continue to serve time. Right now, there's a guy, Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, who's running for president. He sponsored what he calls the Marijuana Justice Act last year, I believe. And that's a bill that would not only reclassify marijuana out of the Schedule I narcotics category, but it would also basically wipe the slate on possession convictions on the federal level. That's still working its way through Congress. Now with the Democratic majority in Congress, still a Republican majority in the Senate, it may or may not get through. But other states, for example, in California, Los Angeles and San Diego have already, between the two of them, cleared out upwards of 30,000 possession convictions there. And you're looking at other places such as New Jersey, Washington, D.C., New York City that are looking to move in that direction as well. And I think that's something that individual states can push that through. I wouldn't be surprised at all if someone in the legislature here in Florida introduced legislation to that effect either this year or next year.
5492937. Chris is in Arlington. Hi, Chris. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, my name is Chris. I live in Arlington and Jacksonville. I have a question regarding in the legislation aspect of the laws being thrown around in Tallahassee. And Representative, I'm a concealed weapons permit holder, and I know the other states that have passed the recreational or medical marijuana. If you receive a card, you end up having to turn your concealed weapons permit in. And I'm wondering if that is the same situation that's going on here in Florida.
I have no idea, but thank you for that question.
We do have the same situation here in Florida. However, Regulate Florida does provide some protections for gun owners.
So you would have to turn in your weapon in Florida if you...
You can't get a medical marijuana card if you're a gun owner.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Regulate Florida, that petition drive would overturn that provision or seek to?
I spoke to Michael Minardi last night, and he said it would provide some protections for gun owners. What those are, I'm not sure.
Okay. There are so many tentacles to this. Here is a tweet from a listener. She writes, I can personally attest to the danger of marijuana for people with bipolar disorder. It interferes with their medicine. Marijuana is used as self-medication for those who are undiagnosed, and bipolar starts to manifest in people's early 20s. Please mention that although the country is embracing marijuana, it can be sometimes dangerous, even deadly, to people who are self-medicating for mental illness. What about that?
Well, you know, I voted for George W. Bush in 2004, and I blame marijuana for that. It's one of those things. Certain, it becomes like, is the drug making the mental issues happen, or are the mental issues driving you towards the drug? Certainly, if you have bipolar condition, depression, things like that, the individual body chemistry is subjective. So what works for one person can be disastrous for someone else. Mm-hmm. And that's just something the individual has to work through. But I think that the vast majority of people would not have issues like that with marijuana. And if you do, you should not use it.
Right. The old claims that it's a gateway drug to harder drugs, those have been debunked.
Yes.
The old claims that it's highly addictive, those have been debunked.
Yes.
However, there is still a subset of the population for whom this is not a good product for them to take.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's even, you know, a stronger argument for regulation of it, because I don't believe this substance is dangerous, but if it is, then it shouldn't be controlled by criminals.
Yes.
It should be placed in the hands of the government that have our best interest in mind, instead of controlled by criminals who are trying to control it in a negative way.
Chuck at the beaches. Go ahead, Chuck. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. I just kind of tuned in, and you may have touched on this already. Suppose you're prescribed a medication by a doctor, and you had the guy call in about the concealed carry permit, or you can't do this, or you can't do that. They make you turn in your firearms. That was an example. You're prescribed medical marijuana by a doctor, which let's assume it's a legitimate medication, or you're prescribed an opioid. Why would your employer or the state be able to not allow you to use that medication? And if it went to court before a jury of your peers, and I was on the jury, and a corporation would not allow someone to do something, or the state tried to take your firearm because you were prescribed a legal medication, which, you know, for instance, opioids, it's everywhere. People take them every day. Mm-hmm. So could this go to court? Because if I'm on a jury of your peers, you're not going to be able to punish somebody for taking a legitimate medication.
Thanks, Chuck, for that.
Oh, yeah. I think what you're getting at is right on point. No, it still exists in a legal gray area, but as we move further along the line with this subject, certainly that's going to happen. Someone will be fired because they have a medical marijuana prescription, and they will sue. Someone will eventually sue over the concealed weapons issues and things like that. Even things like, say, a CDL license. If you're like a bus driver or a pilot or something like that, or a police officer or a firefighter,
yeah,
that's a legal gray area.
We are in that gray area. Sally Kent Peebles, how have other states navigated this? Have they've gone from this gray area in the law and in the culture to certainty, I guess, a more solid status for this product?
Well, they've been able to do that because they voted in adult use and allowed the state to create reasonable regulations. I mean, when you're speaking about employers' rights, unfortunately, we're not seeing the movement forward on that issue. In fact, there was a very important Supreme Court Colorado case for Dish Network. There was a PR paraplegic who lost his job. He obviously needed medical marijuana, and he lost his job, and he also lost that case. It was a pretty big defeat. But, the right of an employer to hire who they want and, you know, control their employees, sobriety it's a tricky subject. And we're watching how other states are dealt with it. We haven't been successful overcoming that hurdle yet.
Not yet. Okay. Shelton.
I wanted to ask you a question, Sally. As an attorney, what do you think that is it possible that there are attorneys working in this field right now in Florida that are looking for an opportunity to maybe float a test case to kind of clarify this issue through the courts while we wait for the for the next stage of legislation to get pushed through?
I'm not privy to any particular cases, but I certainly think in all controversial topics, there are attorneys mm-hmm. out there looking for
test
cases.
They're looking for that case.
Should
sure.
someone call you if they need consultation on something like that?
Absolutely.
Good.
Okay. And let me just point out that as we've been discussing this, literally as we're talking about this, I just got an email from Certera Wellness, which is a cannabis provider. They are launching the new, and I'm quoting here, the new innovative Coral Reefer cannabis brand developed in collaboration with Jimmy Buffett himself.
I want that t-shirt.
This Friday, they are having a kickoff event at the Certera Wellness Center in Jacksonville. People are invited to come in their Jimmy Buffett Hawaiian shirts and float away to Margaritaville, where they can learn about the health benefits of cannabis-based products. This Coral Reefer product comes in four different CBD to THC ratios for those seeking pain relief, mood management, or total body relaxation. Okay, so that just gives you an idea of, that's just one example of the kinds of pitches we get here in the newsroom about this market, which is incredibly well capitalized, expanding rapidly, has, as we're getting tweets pointing out from listeners, a strong lobbying arm. This space, I mean, we can joke about this stuff, but this is a huge business sector now for Florida and only getting bigger.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's very interesting to see this type of event, especially in a medical state. There are, I have a lot of clients, high profile clients that have associated their names with products, but usually they're a little tentative to enter into purely medical markets. And I like seeing Jimmy Buffett jump in with this. And I think it's an indication that they see adult use around the corner where a product like this will be embraced.
Yeah, I mean, who better than Jimmy Buffett to slap his brand name on this product? That's a marketing home run, I think.
Oh, yeah, you can take that to the bank. And we're seeing a lot of celebrities, like Sally says, investing in these companies. People like Snoop Dogg, Willie Nelson, Mike Tyson, Lamar Odom. In fact, former Massachusetts Governor William Weld is on the board of directors for one company. John Boehner, who a high-ranking conservative Republican Speaker of the House, is now on the board of directors for a cannabis company. And, you know, if you thought his face was red before, you have no idea.
Okay, getting lots of emails. Here's one from Vic. I don't know how much medical cannabinoids cost, but I've been told in Florida they require something like monthly visits to a doctor, which of course are not covered by insurance. The legislature seems determined to allow this only for the well-off. Thanks for that, Vic. Here's another email from Anna. I heard you discussing bipolar disorder and complications with marijuana. Well, marijuana is what has kept me out of the heights of mania in my bipolar disorder. However, it is hard to self-medicate for everyone, as not all marijuana has the same potency. Mm-hmm. So as we discuss this, yes, let's make sure we are adding into the discussion that for some people with certain medical conditions, this is not a good product to use.
Yes.
Okay, like a lot of things. So we just want to make sure we note that. Margaret is on the north side. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Melissa. I just wanted to tell you, I just heard on Tracy, I think, from St. Augustine saying he takes it for arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
That is not necessary. He can go to the health food store. He can go on the computer. He can get it from Amazon. Mm-hmm. And he can get wheat germ oil from them, now brand, and it will get rid of your arthritis.
I hope he's still listening, Margaret. Thanks for that advice. Thanks, Margaret.
Oh.
Let me take one more call.
Yes.
Carla at the Beaches. Go ahead, Carla.
Sure. I think there maybe needs to be a little more balanced discussion about CBD versus THC, because, you know, especially when we're looking at employment, I'm a certified rehab counselor and work with people with all different kinds of disabilities. And, you know, CBD has a lot of positive effects. I think if we want to legalize medical marijuana, I think that's, you know, absolutely a good option for a lot of people. But I do think as an employer, I mean, you look at commercial truck drivers, they can't drive when they're on certain opioids or if they're taking insulin because there are safety risks. if somebody is smoking and there is a high level of THC, you know, it affects the brain, it affects judgment, it slows reaction time. There are definitely some, I believe, legitimate reasons why certain employers would not want somebody, you know, using marijuana, especially with high levels of THC, you know, during the day while they're working. So I just think that needs to be pointed out.
Thanks for that. Yeah. Yes, THC is not the same as CBD. Let's quickly clarify that if we could.
So the marijuana plant is made up of hundreds of chemical compounds called cannabinoids, two of which are THC and cannabidiol, which is known as CBD. THC is the one that provides a euphoric effect. It's the one we think of getting us high. It also does have some medicinal value as well, like pain relief, and it helps people go to sleep. But CBD, which we've seen get more and more pressed recently, it has incredible medicinal effects, such as pain relief. It can help anxiety. It can be applied topically. And the key there is it doesn't have any euphoric effect. It doesn't affect your brain.
It comes from hemp.
It actually comes from, so cannabis sativa is the plant. Mm-hmm. And then under cannabis sativa, there's two, you can say, strains or two kind of divisions. One is marijuana and one is hemp.
One is hemp.
So all these cannabinoids, including THC and CBD, are found in both hemp and both marijuana. And that's key to understand.
Let's take one more call. It's Paul in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Melissa?
Okay, go ahead.
We're experimenting putting CBD in with our honey at Bee Friends Farms. Mm. We're probably 3 to 4 months away from perfecting getting the proper dosage and the proper mixture done. But we see it a big market. We see it being very helpful medicinally. And, of course, honey itself is very helpful for you, too, also.
Wow. Yeah. Thanks for that. And of course, I've tried the honey at Bee Friends Farm and it is delicious. So, Paul, thank you for that. So, yeah, CBD going into all manner of products.
Oh, absolutely. Whenever Winnie the Pooh finds out about that, they're going to have to add a second deadbolt to the door. And that's it. The caller mentioned earlier about employers not wanting people to be high and all that. There's no evidence so far that the CBD compounds do anything to affect judgment, motor skills, or whatever. But it's worth noting that when you're, whether it's CBD or THC, you know, you shouldn't necessarily be behind the wheel of a car. You shouldn't be driving a boat. You shouldn't be flying. Shouldn't be on a jetpack or anything like that.
At Lakeview Health, which treats addiction, has just emailed me as well, asking me to point out that on April 26th, they're having a conference at their center on Corporate Square Boulevard. It's titled Cannabis, Medicine, or Mayhem: Neurobiology and Health Impact of Marijuana Behind Alcohol Use Disorder. So go to lakeviewhealth.com for more on that. Just noting that as this product moves more fully into the mainstream, there are caveats for some people. But we thank you both so much, Sally Kent Peebles with Vicente Cederberg and cannabis columnist Shelton Hall, who, by the way, is going to be appearing more regularly discussing these issues on the show since there's so much interest. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Up next, a UNF student Cinderella story. It's being turned into a movie. That's next.
Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man? If he says he swam to China and he sells you South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that reefer man. Have you ever met funny reefer man? Have you ever met funny reefer man? If he says he walks the ocean anytime he takes a notion, then you know you're talking to the reefer man. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Reefer man.
Have you ever met fun reefer man?
Reefer man.
Have you ever met a funny reefer man?
Reefer man.
If he takes a sudden mean Pennsylvania wants to give you Pennsylvania, then you know you're talking to the Reefer Man.
Join WJCT and PNC Grow Up Great to celebrate Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the WJCT studios. Meet Daniel Tiger, Katarina Kitty Cat, and their friends. Tour TIAA Bank Field, meet community helpers, face painters, enjoy local food trucks, arts and crafts, and so much more. Reserve your spot today for this free, family-friendly community event by visiting WJCT.org. Start something good in your neighborhood.
All the music that's fit to play Monday through Saturday nights at 9, only on 89 FM WJCT, where music matters.
Welcome back. Well, she went from a childhood of abuse, neglect, and dysfunction to becoming Miss California. Then UNF student Christina Meredith turned to writing and activism for kids in the foster care system, kids like the one she had once been. And there's more. Her riveting memoir, Cinder Girl, is now being turned into a major motion picture. She joins us now in studio. Christina Meredith, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
What an incredible story you have to share. So your childhood, I think it's safe to say, was horrific. And I'm so sorry to hear this, that you suffered physical, psychological, even sexual abuse as a kid. So a very difficult childhood is how you began, right?
Yeah, it was very painful, but I always say this, it's chiseled out of me a type of tenacity and grit that wouldn't otherwise be there if I hadn't suffered so much. So I see the purpose in pain, and I'm glad that I can turn something so painful and horrible into something so good.
Right. So you went from a difficult home life into the foster care system. Mm-hmm. Then you aged out of that, and like so many young adults confront, when they age out of the foster care system, often they really don't have anywhere to turn. They don't have support. They don't have somewhere to live. So that was you for a while, too, wasn't it? You were living in your car. Is that right?
That's right. Every year, we have 500,000 children in foster care, and every year, 20,000 of them age out and become homeless. And so I was part of that statistic. And, you know, when I lived in my car, I worked at Casa Monica Hotel as a valet attendant, which was funny because I just had gotten my license after the third time. And I worked as a waitress at Village Inn in St. Augustine. And I also babysat part-time. So I was hustling to try to get out of that situation, but it was very hard. And I prayed and I read my Bible. And, you know, I was a good girl when I was homeless. I never partied. I wasn't sleeping around. I hadn't done anything to put myself in that situation. I just got dealt a bad hand. And, you know, I think the most painful part of being homeless was realizing that I couldn't just shower when I wanted to.
And you had to use the beach showers.
The beach access, yeah. So all up and down from St. Augustine Beach to Atlantic Beach, I would shower and you know, I think there's something very humbling about trying to not let people know that you're actually taking a real shower and you're not just rinsing off from the beach.
Right. So how did you go from that to becoming Miss California?
Well, his name is Jesus. But I moved out to LA with my little sister to get a fresh start and really try working my book, because I had dreamed it, writing my story and writing my book when I was homeless. That's what I wanted to do. And so when I moved out to LA with that goal in mind, I was just so focused on reforming foster care and bringing awareness to that cause in my book. And then when I was in Whole Foods, a pageant recruiter approached me out of nowhere. And that's how that happened. And I looked it up and I was like, oh, wow, this could be a stepping stone for me.
Sure.
And I had never been to pageant girl. You know, I didn't go to prom. And the foster parents that I had when I was in high school, put me in the Nice High School pageant, which was a disaster. But, you know, so I gave Miss California a good college try. And obviously it worked out well. And I just utilized that for a better cause,
Wow. So from that pageant win, you created the Christina Meredith Foundation, and that's a nonprofit, as you said, that supports foster care girls who are struggling in abusive situations. You also wrote your memoir, Cinder Girl. You went from abuse and homelessness to this incredible activism. And this is a book everyone should pick up, as you said, because it's a story of resilience and determination. And now Hollywood is interested in your story even. Yes. How did that happen and where's that?
So my mentors are all incredible people. I mean, Dr. Henry Cloud wrote my foreword, and the people who mentor me, Brad Freeman and Betsy Kennedy and Aaron Brown, they're all incredibly successful, and they're all out in LA. And, you know, Aaron has been best friends with Betsy, who they both went to Stanford and producing movies, and she just happens to be partners at one of the biggest Hollywood management companies in LA. So that's how that happened.
Where do things stand in the process
developing
your story into a film?
It's going really well. We are just continuing to put the word out there and share the book with a short list. And we start meetings here soon, and it's really exciting. I can't really talk about more, but but trust that when things start getting finalized, there'll be more word. But you can definitely anticipate a Cinder Girl movie.
Who would you like to see play you your life story?
Lady Gaga. Too easy.
Lady Gaga.
She's on the short list.
Okay. And I could easily see that. I mean, you're a beautiful petite blonde.
Thank you.
There's probably several actresses who could do you well.
Yeah.
But that'd be a good choice.
She's strong. She's strong, and I really loved her character, of course, in her latest movie, mm-hmm. A Star Is Born. I think she did an excellent job. But also, besides that, her platform is mental health. And I'm an activist. I talk about trauma healing and PTSD in and out of uniform all the time. You know,
that's right. Let's mention you are in the U.S. Army too.
Yes, ma'am. Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot. You have a lot going on.
Yeah. What do they call me? The Swiss Army knife of women. So, yeah, I'm a soldier in the United States Army, and I'm real excited to turn my enlistment into a commission in December. And, you know, I think I am drawn to Lady Gaga because she pushes trauma therapy and PTSD healing like I do, and I've been doing it for years, and I just really resonate with that.
People need to not only read Cinder Girl, but they can also support the Christina Meredith Foundation. How can they do that?
So they can go to my website and fill out a newsletter information. And we actually are building the website right now to start accepting donations, which is really exciting. So if you just fill out the newsletter information the first day that we launch the website, which will be sometime next week, then you can financially partner with us because we're going to be putting boots on the ground in 24 to 36 months with our facilities and our charter schools. So we're really excited.
You can also meet Christina at a book signing event on May 13th at San Marco Books and More. The book is Cinder Girl, and we will wait to see your story on the big screen at some point.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So, Christina Meredith, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Oh,
we appreciate you being here.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
And in a moment, spring has sprung. We'll take a visit out to Congaree and Penn and see what's happening out on the farm. That's in just a moment here on First Coast Connect. Keep listening.
Edible Northeast Florida Magazine tells the story of local food. On stands now is the April 2019 Plants and Meat issue at restaurants, stores, markets, and eateries throughout Northeast Florida. For more info, edibleneflorida.com.
ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington remind you to act fast, whether it's water, mold, or fire damage. ServPro of Jacksonville South, 721-2230. Like it never even happened.
Last month's flooding in Nebraska left behind washed out highways and destroyed levees. It's turned everyday errands into hours-long detours, and rebuilding is a huge challenge.
We're used to floods. We're used to a roadway flooding or a bridge being damaged. But we're not used to 27 bridges being damaged all at one time.
Trying to get back to normal in Nebraska this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
New debate over who can get the death penalty.
The problem is that a lot of cases involving serious mental illness are, on the face of them, very terrifying.
Mental illness, capital punishment, and one man's uncertain fate. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Today at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
It's a fantasy genre about factual people. Real person fiction has millions of fans. These stories about real-life heroes and celebrities are increasingly popular and controversial. The rights of a celebrity, copyright, publicity, and portrayal can get complex very quickly. What happens when fan fiction and reality collide? Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, spring has finally sprung, which means Congaree and Penn has a lot going on heading into this holiday weekend. I visited the farm yesterday and got to try my hand at harvesting one of their special crops, mahas, with founder and farmer Scott Meyer. Here's a little bit of that.
So that one's like really ripe because it's pretty much like falling off the tree. The darker the red color, The riper they are.
Yeah. Okay.
And the more, they actually are pretty sweet once they get like fully deep, deep red.
So if I eat this raw, it's gonna be more tart than sweet.
Exactly.
Okay.
But then once we make some jelly and you try the jelly, it's actually very delightful. And it's similar to a cranberry in that it's very, very tart raw. But then when cooked down and reduced with some sugar, it's really quite delicious.
Okay, here goes.
There it goes.
That's tart.
Mm-hmm. It's tart.
But it's good. That does kind of taste like a cranberry a little bit. Yeah.
And eventually you have like a implement on the front of a tractor that kind of makes a big umbrella around the tree. Have you ever seen anything like that?
In Italy, isn't this how they shake the olives out of the trees?
Yeah, exactly. And we actually are shaking our mulberry trees as well.
Okay, so we're gonna shake it.
Yeah, you wanna shake the tree today?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, it's real violent. Like, there you go, you're doing great.
Get out all your aggression.
Yeah, it's a good stress reliever.
Shaking the tree at Congaree and Penn as Scott Meyer joins us now in studio. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thank you. And thanks for letting us come out and visit you guys yesterday. I would encourage everyone, if they've never been out to Congaree and Penn, just outside of town, they need to go because this spring, you guys have a lot going on that people can come out and participate in to see how this farm really works. What all's on the agenda?
Yeah, so this Saturday, we've got our Easter egg hunt and brunch, which is actually a sold-out event, but it's going to be a lot of fun. But going into May, there is still some opportunities to get out and see the farm. On the 12th, we actually are hosting a Mother's Day brunch, which is a great way to kind of change the pace and get outside on Mother's Day. We're going to have some really nice food set out, and we'll be offering wagon rides throughout the property. And then the following Saturday, May the 18th, will be our Explore the Farm Day of the spring. And it's going to be a really incredible event. We're going to have cheese making classes. We'll have learning about bees and honey tasting with Bee Friends Farm. We're also going to be offering some courses in tree cultivation and even a kids cruise with a scavenger hunt. And that'll be offered two times throughout the day. And they can register for all these things on our website at congareandpen.com.
So you're going to turn the kids loose in the fields on a scavenger hunt? That sounds fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun, Melissa.
Yeah. Okay. And what is so cool about Congaree and Penn is, as we just listened to, you harvest mahas, which is a unique berry crop to the southeast, which are so delicious. They make the greatest jelly. People can buy jelly at the farm or on your website. You harvest rice. You're going to be doing blackberries. And people can go out and see this working farm and also participate in what's now called agro-tourism. This is a way for them to see your operations, but also kind of go on a tourist trip right in their own hometown.
That's right. And every week we're actually open Wednesday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. And people are welcome to come out and explore the farm. And there's a more organized farm tour every Friday morning at 10 a.m. and Sunday morning at 10 a.m., leaving at 10:30 to go out onto the farm and learn about everything that we do. And then Friday nights, we actually have what's called a sunset cruise. And it's not going to be on a boat, but it's actually going to be on a wagon pulled by a tractor. And we cruise out to about a 100-acre pasture and just take in the sunset, maybe while enjoying one of our delicious farm ciders or a glass of wine.
Kind of like a hayride.
That's right. Exactly.
You also do 20 at the farm dinners where you just do a really small group of 20 people and a delicious dinner that's made in part with products from the farm. I've been to one of those and I have to say, I highly recommend that too.
Yeah, it's
really,
a lot
really
of fun.
Nice. Yeah. So you guys have so much happening. It's incredible. What's next for your world domination plan at Congaree and Penn?
Oh, well, there's not too much new that we're trying to get done this year. We have gotten back into the landscape tree business, which I grew up in, where we're installing both commercial and residential landscape trees. But outside of that, we're gearing up for blackberry season starting in the month of June. We'll be allowing people to pre-register to come pick. Really delicious, juicy blackberries. It'll be running Wednesday through Sunday throughout the month of June. And then after that, in August, we'll have our muscadine harvest and we'll begin getting ready for the fall.
So much happening. Go to congareeandpenn.com for more. Also, check out the video on our WJCT Facebook page where you can see a little bit more about how mejas are raised, shaken off the trees, and turned into a delicious jelly product. So, Scott Meyer, always good to see you. Thanks for taking us into your world.
Thank you again.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers as well. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And if you have comments, we always need your feedback. Send it to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And on tomorrow's show, a conversation with State Attorney Melissa Nelson. Don't miss that. That's tomorrow. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Have a great day. We'll be right back here at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
5 o'clock, the clock is crowing, though the frost is on the pumpkin. Back to sleep, you can't be going if you want to be a bumpkin. It's so chic for look or peek to take your picture with the Guernsey in the wilds of old Connecticut or possibly New Jersey.
Muzzy, when it's over, makes them feel more glamorous and more gay today.
Hard and Kaufman in Bucks County pulled a farming killadilla when they planted in their cornfields all their clippings from Joe Miller.
Farming is so charming, they all say, hey.
Farming.
Chasing chickens.
That's the fashion, farming.
Raising chickens.
That's the passion of our great celebrities of today.
Bernard Shaw doing turkey in the straw.
Don't inquire of Georgie Rand.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.